This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Your number is 877-217-5757. Our email is talk@talklouisiana.org. In a few moments, we'll start with Robert Mann, LSU Manship School professor, and he, of course, is a man of letters who's written several well-received books, and the latest will be coming very soon, and it's about Ronald Wilson Reagan, the 40th American president. Before we go to Bob, though, we would like to ask for your support. This is the Spring Member Fest, and this is one of the few times of the year where, for an extended period, we seek your support, and we would like to hear from you. Your support is essential to what we do at WRKF, and please give us a call at 855-893-9753. And a reminder that there are still a few options if you so choose to go to the Jazz Fest, courtesy of WRKF, the 50th annual celebration at the fairgrounds in New Orleans. And if you contribute $40 a month, you can go and you get two folding chairs to go with it, and you'll know you've done your good deed in supporting this treasure in our community. An oasis of civility on the dial. WRKF has been around since January of 1980 and has produced programming like nobody else. You'll hear shows here that you would not hear in any other place. And again, the number to call is 855-893-9753. And Bob Mann, good morning to you.
Good morning, Jim.
Bob, are you still on the board, by the way?
No, not for the last couple of years.
Well, but you were a member, a board member in good standing for quite some time at WRKF, and we commend you for your service. Bob does a lot of things in our community beyond working at the Manship School, but I know you have commented that your association with the radio station was one that gave you great satisfaction.
Well, it really has been. My membership, long-time membership, but especially my time on the board was really one of the more satisfying acts of public service I've done since I've lived here in Baton Rouge, and I think that WRKF really is the treasure that you just mentioned it was.
Well, Bob Mann has, as I noted, written many books about American life and politics, and some have been received well at the highest levels. His book about Vietnam was one that is a staple for anyone who is studying that war, which divided our country, A Grand Delusion, America's Descent into Vietnam, and also The Walls of Jericho, Lyndon Johnson, Hubert Humphrey, Richard Russell, and the Struggle for Civil Rights was a major story about the battle for civil rights legislation in the United States Congress. His latest work will be coming very soon, and Bob, who has on this show identified himself as a liberal, he is writing about a man who was once a liberal. Some people may not realize it, but Ronald Reagan was a liberal with a capital L in 1948. But by the time he ran for governor of California 18 years later, he had become a conservative icon. And, Bob, that is the title of your book.
Yeah, it's the story that of Reagan's life, the period of his life that often gets a chapter or two in the major biographies of his life, but has really not got the examination, a full book-length examination that I think that it deserves. And I was curious about how this guy became a conservative, having been what he described himself as, a hemophiliac liberal, growing up in a household that worshipped Franklin Roosevelt, and was a very active Democrat, supporting people like Harry Truman and Hubert Humphrey, and campaigning against Richard Nixon when he ran for the Senate in California in 1950. And so it just intrigued me. What happened in the 1950s and early 60s to make this once liberal Democrat become a conservative? And I think it's a fascinating story, and it's a story that really has not been fully told until this point.
Well, in the 1950s, Reagan was trying to chase communists out of Hollywood. Was that one of the reasons why he changed his political strategy?
Well, yes and no. It certainly was his true, I think, political awakening, and it was the part of his life that made him, I think, politically active. But it's also worth noting that everybody pretty much, both parties, almost all the members of both parties, Democrat, conservative, liberal Republicans. I mean, everybody was against communism. I mean, that's the one area where I think the two parties were really united in the immediate post-Cold War era. But it was Reagan's fight against communism in Hollywood as president of the Screen Actors Guild, and even before then, that I think led him in more deeply into politics and led him into his political activism in the 1950s.
Well, Ronald Reagan in the 1950s hit some hard times with his acting career. By then, he was in his 40s, and he went a couple of years being unemployed, actually took public benefits. So you would think that perhaps he would become more liberal rather than less, but then he went to work for General Electric, and some people have pointed to that as one of the reasons why he had this epiphany. Did that have anything to do with it?
Oh, I think his work for General Electric beginning in the fall of 1954 had everything to do with it. And it was, he began hosting General Electric Theater, which became one of the more popular television shows of the mid and late 50s, and he became a big star once again. But it was his travels around the country visiting GE plants and facilities and visiting with the workers. And then while he was in these small communities, speaking to civic organizations, chambers of commerce, community funds, that kind of thing, that I believe began to draw him more into the orbit of conservative Republican politics. And to me, the story of Ronald Reagan's evolution from liberal to conservative is all about those years really beginning in earnest in 1955 through the end of the 50s and early 60s working for GE that pulled him toward the conservative side of the Republican Party and the conservative side of the spectrum.
In Reagan's book, Where's the Rest of Me, written in 1966 when he was running for governor of California, he fully acknowledges that he did not really want that job with GE. He thought it would be a career killer. But he says he changed his mind after he consulted with an astrologer. And that's another thing that people may find weird, but there is no doubt that Ronald Reagan made many decisions in his life based on astrology, Robert Mann.
Yeah, I don't put a whole lot of stock in that. I think Reagan took the job for GE because they were willing to pay him $125,000 a year at a time when he had no job. I don't think it took much astrology to figure that equation. Reagan was supporting himself for the couple of years before he took the GE job by making cameo appearances on various TV shows, which, in Reagan's estimation, was a real comedown. And at the lowest ebb of his acting career, he took on a 2-week gig as the master of ceremonies of a Las Vegas comedy and music review, which was just a humiliating time for him. So I don't think it was a difficult decision to take this job. It made him a rich man.
Legend has it that Reagan was offered the role that went to Humphrey Bogart in Casablanca. Is that accurate?
No, there was a mention in, I think it was Variety magazine, that Reagan might have gotten that role, but everything that I've read by people who know anything about that movie say that this was Reagan was never going to get that. He was never going to get that part. That was just not something that they were going to give to him. But that rumor has lived on.
Well, he was a pretty good actor, but not that good.
He was a better actor than a lot of people give him credit for being. I tend to agree with Garrett Wills, the biographer and historian, who said that Reagan's problem was that he sought out parts that he wasn't good for. He didn't have that great of a range. He was very good at playing himself, but he didn't want to play himself. He got frustrated with being typecast, and he was probably not ever going to be a great leading man. He was a good supporting actor, and he wanted to expand into the kind of roles that he just wasn't qualified or talented enough to support.
In his final film in 1964, The Killers, he beats up Angie Dickinson.
It was his only movie. His last movie was the only movie that he played a bad guy, and he was a really bad guy. And he hated that movie. He regretted making that movie. He said it was a really bad decision on his part. But by that time, he knew his acting career was pretty much over.
Why did you decide to focus on Reagan?
Well, it started out because I was fascinated by the speech that he gave for Barry Goldwater on national television on October 27th of 1964. And it was a speech that propelled Reagan into greater national prominence. It was the best speech of the presidential election, and it was given by a guy who wasn't a candidate in the election. Reagan did the same thing in 1976 on behalf of Gerald Ford, gave what I think is the best speech of the 76 election, not having been the nominee. So I started really to write a book about that speech and how it came about and what it did to Reagan's career.
We'll spend some more time with Robert Mann after this pause. 877-217-5757. Back with more Talk Louisiana in 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana, and thanks to you for supporting WRKF. I understand all the Jazz Fest tickets are now gone, so thanks for your support. And if you'd like to show your support and receive perhaps something else like the 225 Club, you can join for less than $20 a month, about 60 cents a day, and get a digital subscription to the New York Times every day of the year, 365 days a year. You'll be able to access the newspaper of record in our country wherever you are. Please give us a call, 855-893-9753, if you enjoy WRKF. And if you like this hour of programming, we like to hear from you between 9 and 10 o'clock, 855-893-9753. Robert Mann, professor of mass communication at LSU, former aide to John Brough, Bennett Johnston, Kathleen Blanco, and Russell Long. He is with us to talk about his latest biographical target, Ronald Wilson Reagan. And the title of the book, Bob, which will be available soon, is?
Becoming Ronald Reagan, the Rise of a Conservative Icon.
Becoming Ronald Reagan, the Rise of a Conservative Icon. Again, if you'd like to talk with Bob in our remaining time with him, 877-217-5757. A listener notes that Reagan's hired biographer, a man who had won a Pulitzer Prize, Edmund Morris, got so frustrated that he wrote a terrible book about Reagan because he just could not figure the man out. Why would you try to go there when Edmund Morris got so frustrated he wishes he had never done the book on Reagan?
Well, you know, that book, Morris's book, is all at once a treasure and a hot mess. It gave me a lot of good leads. I pulled some very good stories out of there, but you have to be careful with that book because he writes it from the perspective of that Morris, is a childhood friend who grew up in Dixon, Illinois, with Ronald Reagan, and that was a total fantasy. And so it's a very strange book. But yeah, so I don't know. I think I figured part of Reagan out, why he became a conservative, but I don't think anybody will ever figure out Reagan to the degree that Morris tried to.
877-217-5757 for Robert Mann, who has taken on the task of writing about the 40th American president, and there have been volumes written about Reagan, but he was, despite being accused of being a man of little substance, a most complex individual. David in Atlanta. David, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning. I'm a big fan of Mr. Mann. You know, Ronald Reagan in the movie got to slap Angie Dickinson, and for what I've read, JFK got to make whoopee with on the second floor of the White House while there was a party going on downstairs.
Well, go ahead.
Okay.
Well, thanks for your...
You know, speaking of Reagan, I remember coming home from work in the early 80s, and people were crying on the MacNeil-Lowry report, and I have articles in the New York Times to prove this. Mr. Mann might be the first person I've ever talked to who knows about this, but in Reagan's first budget, and it was passed, but he didn't sign it at the last minute, he proposed to remove minimum Social Security away from many people who worked, many minorities, where no withholdings was withheld, because at the time the law didn't require it, in order to finance tax cuts for millionaires and billionaires, and he was going to take their minimum Social Security away, which I think is so far beyond the pale it could make me lose my lunch.
All right, Bob, would you respond to that?
Well, I'm not a scholar of Reagan's presidency, but I can tell you that he spent a lot of his time in the late 50s and early 60s railing against Social Security, and very much, in fact, it almost persuaded Goldwater's people to not allow Reagan's speech to be aired on national television in October of 1964, because Reagan, they thought, went overboard in supporting Goldwater's plan to make Social Security voluntary. And Reagan persuaded them that it was one of the more popular lines in the speech that he'd been giving around the country, and Goldwater eventually relented and allowed Reagan to make the speech. But yes, his opposition to a compulsory Social Security system was a hallmark of Reagan's speeches for many, many years prior to his becoming president.
877-217-5757. Still time to get in with Professor Robert Mann, who holds the Manship Chair in Journalism at the Manship School of Mass Communication. Now, Tracy at the Capitol at talklouisiana.org asks about the story that Reagan often told about a woman driving a welfare Cadillac. Was this a real story, or was this concocted in the vast mind of the 40th president?
Well, and this is, no, it was not a real story. Reagan, this is a big part of the book where I show that Reagan started this kind of conflation of fantasy with fact very early in his speaking career. And he would confuse scenes that he'd seen in a movie or been in a movie. He would take stuff out of Reader's Digest without really vetting it. Someone would tell him a story and he would repeat it. And aides around Reagan later, Mike Beaver, who worked for him when he was governor of California, later in the White House, and other people said you had to be really careful what you told Reagan, because it would go into this computer of a mind of his. And he did have a photographic memory, but he picked up stuff, and a lot of it was not true, and he repeated it as if it were true. He was very good at convincing people that what he was saying was true.
Well, he shares some of that with the current president, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does, except, and I make this point in my book, that I think Reagan's inaccuracies were not mendacious. They were careless. Reagan was careless. Reagan was very well read. He collected a lot of information. He wrote his own speeches, at least before he became president. He was a well read, intellectually curious person to a certain extent. I think you can make an argument that Trump is much more mendacious in his untruth-telling than Reagan ever thought to be.
The way they rose to power, there is some comparison I think that would be valid. Reagan was 55 when he ran for governor of California, and of course he was known prior to his political odyssey as a movie star, and of course Donald Trump was 69 when he ran for president, and we knew Donald Trump. Most of us had already had some opinion of him long before he ran, and obviously for a lot of people it was a very positive opinion. And it's an example of how personality can, pardon the pun, trump everything when it comes to running for the highest office in the land.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, when Reagan did it, it was unheard of. I mean, well, you know, George Murphy, who Reagan had been in a song and dance man, who had been one of Reagan's co-stars in a movie in the early 1940s, had won a seat in the U.S. Senate from California the year before Reagan became governor. But what Reagan did and what he did beyond being governor was really unheard of in American politics, going from entertainment into politics at the high level that Reagan did it. Now we don't really think that it's that unusual.
And Holly in the Garden District notes that of the 44 men, not 45, but 44, since Cleveland was president twice, who have been president of the United States, Reagan and Trump have all the divorces in the history of the presidency. two for Trump and one for Reagan and none for anybody else.
Trump has 3/4 of them, but that is true.
Yeah, 2/3, I think.
He's been married.
Two divorces. But
3/4 of the wives, two-thirds of the divorces.
Well, by most accounts, Ronald Reagan was quite a rounder in his early years, quite Trumpian in his pursuit of opposite-sex associations. But after he met Nancy, that was a game-changer, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I think that getting married to Nancy 1952 was also, his first wife, Jane Wyman, was much more committed to her acting career than Reagan was to his, much more of a gifted actress than Reagan was an actor. She won an Academy Award and was, very well regarded in Hollywood. But she was very opposed to Reagan's political activism and his obsession with the Screen Actors Guild, and it just was a point of contention in their marriage. And once Nancy came into his life and once she married him, she devoted her, she had been an actress herself, but she devoted her life to her husband. She was supportive of everything that he did and really was, his partner in his political career. And that changed everything. He was no longer married to someone who was opposed to his political activism.
The book that is coming soon is Becoming Ronald Reagan, Conservative Icon, Bob Mann. We'll be talking about it soon, I'm sure. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jim.
Back after this pause on WRKF.